Welcome to the Vicar Law Podcast, Protecting Legacies, Resolving Conflicts. I'm Lydia Vicar, Director of Vicar Law, where we specialise in succession law, civil disputes and litigation in Queensland. If you want to safeguard your assets, navigate estate planning with confidence, or resolve legal conflicts effectively, you're in the right place. Join me each week as we break down complex legal issues into clear, practical insights, helping you protect your legacy and find solutions with certainty. So let's dive in. Hello and welcome back to the Vicar Law Podcast, Protecting Legacies, Resolving Conflict. I am your host, Lydia Vicar, Director of Vicar Law. And today we are continuing on with our November monthly theme of elder law and talking about, I don't know how it's become one of my favorite topics, but I literally talk to everyone about capacity all the time. I have this like weird capacity obsession that I just must talk to people about capacity in all different circumstances. So yes, today we're talking about capacity. And my love of capacity was really fueled by a conference I went to at the beginning of August, which was literally an incapacity conference held by STEP. And for 2 days, we talked about capacity and elder law and enduring powers of attorney in this country. And it was so fascinating to me, really opened my eyes about capacity, how I look at people, how I look at elderly people when they come to me to get their estate planning documents done. It's really change the way that I practice law, which is fantastic because that's 100% what you want out of a conference when you're, you know, taking time out and doing that. And I feel like it's really benefiting my clients. So let's talk about capacity. And I'm going to talk about it in the context of estate planning. So doing a will and doing an enduring power of attorney in particular. So capacity. Everyone starts with the presumption of capacity, that they have capacity to make a will. And then it's really kind of when there's a challenge to capacity, it's for the person that's challenging to rebut that capacity. So what I say to people that come to me that are elderly is I make my own assessment as to your capacity. That's a test. It's a legal test for me to determine whether you have capacity to do your estate planning documents. And if I think you do, fantastic. If I think you don't, we'll go from there. But when I talk about capacity in the estate planning context, capacity is really a task-specific concept. So when you're looking at capacity, you really need to think, does the person have capacity for that particular task? So you might have capacity, for example, to consent to a minor medical procedure, but you might not have the capacity to consent to a more complex procedure, which has a number of risks involved, and you have to make an assessment of the risk. You might not have the capacity to make that proper assessment of the risks, but you have capacity to understand a minor procedure. Okay. So when we're looking at estate planning, I'm really thinking, do you have the capacity to understand the will that you are wishing to make today? A great example comes from a very old case, literally 1870, the case was in England called Banks and Goodfellow. And what the court looked at was some key requirements of whether someone has testamentary capacity, so the capacity to make a will, so determine. And this is really from the point of view of a lawyer, you know, having some kind of practical framework to assess whether the person had capacity. So one of the things is to understand the nature and effect of the will. Do they know what they're signing? Do they understand the distribution of the estate? And then the second thing is knowing the extent of their property. So having an understanding of their assets and their liabilities that are subject to their will. What I say is you don't have to know the value. You don't have to sit here and say, oh, my property is worth $1,690,000 based on these sales, XXX. You can know that your property, your principal place of residence, is your biggest asset, okay? And that's having an understanding of the assets of your estate. Another thing that we look at is seeing whether they recognize who has a moral claim to the estate, so really around spouses and children. This is particularly so when people are excluding children. It happens all the time. I know you're sitting there thinking, oh, that'll never happen to me. Happens all the time, get it all the time. Estranged children, people don't provide for a certain child or provide for less. So really seeing if they have an understanding of people that might make a claim, so the risks of the distribution in their will, and then just ensuring they're not suffering from a mental disorder. Okay, so that's kind of the requirements that was in the Banks and Goodfellow. What that practically means is when I'm with somebody and I am trying to determine capacity, I ask them very open-ended questions about changes they want to make to their will, why they want to make a will today, what their assets and liabilities are, what their family dynamics are. And this is something that I do in every will, okay? Now, one thing that I really have changed in my practice since going to this conference is that I always start, and it's not that I didn't start from a presumption of capacity, but when I am seeing an older person, a more elderly person, I start from a presumption that they have capacity. What I used to do was send them straight off to a doctor to find out if they had testamentary capacity based on the determination of a medical practitioner. I don't do that anymore, okay? So the first thing I do is figure out myself whether I think that the person has testamentary capacity and whether they might be unduly influenced by someone in their life. So that's how I start. Now, if the person comes to me and they want to do something quite drastic in their will, and I will say that most drastic that elderly people are doing are excluding someone from their will or providing for an uneven distribution between their children. Now, what that will do is that will create at some point, most likely, a challenge to the will, and in particular, a challenge to the capacity of the person when they made that will. So what I do is I flick a switch and I go into defensive mode. And from that point, everything that I'm doing in terms of preparing your estate planning is really to defensively establish that you have capacity. And one of the things that I will do will be consult your treating medical practitioner as to whether you have capacity. And in some circumstances, this may require the testator to go to somebody a little bit like a geriatrician. They've got like psychiatrists that can make assessment on capacities. And so it really depends on the circumstances. But I do flip into a bit more of a defensive mode. But for the majority of the time, based on the discussions, I am able from a lawyer's perspective to make kind of an idea about your capacity, have some idea, and always starting with the presumption of capacity. So capacity is really task specific. So when I'm preparing the documents, those are the things that I'm looking at, thinking about, and it's also the reason that you see a lawyer, okay? Don't see the public trustee, don't do an online will, don't do a DIY will, because I am there to make sure that your wishes are followed through at your death. And I can do that by, you know, taking a number of steps to defensively preserve the presumption of capacity. You don't get that. And quite frankly, lots of challenges to wills I see are wills done by the public trustee by way of example. So, and it's not because they've done the wrong thing in the will, it's just that they don't, because lawyers don't take those appointments, they don't have that kind of legal experience that we have in really looking at the cases. You know, I'm looking at cases all the time. I'm influenced by matters that I'm seeing all the time, and that really informs my ability to make an estate plan. So that's capacity for the circumstances of your estate plan. Now, an enduring power of attorney. There are two ways, and I have done podcasts on enduring power of attorneys. You can have a look back at the previous episodes about enduring powers of attorney. But for the majority of my enduring powers of attorney, I will have that the financial attorney, and sorry, I'll just backtrack for those that haven't had the benefit of my previous podcast. An enduring power of attorney is a document whereby you, the principal, appoint attorneys to make health decisions and financial decisions for you in certain circumstances. Health is when you are incapacitated, and then financial, the appointment can be made immediately or in certain circumstances. And in the wills that I do, 98% of the time, the financial decision making will be when the person is deemed incapacitated by a medical practitioner. So that's when capacity kind of kicks in, okay? It's very clear in my enduring powers of attorney. There's no confusion. And the feedback that I've received from people who have subsequently been found to be incapacitated by their attorneys is that it provided them a really solid point in time to say, I'm taking over now, okay, as opposed to an immediate appointment. Now, lots of people do immediate appointments, lots of practitioners, and for my elderly clients, pending on their situations, I will often do immediate appointments for financial attorneys because those financial attorneys are already helped them. So what people will do is they'll come with an existing power of attorney. I'm updating it in some way, but we do an immediate power because that's what they're already, what everyone's operating under, okay? Really gray area, and this is where capacity becomes so gray, is where you have an immediate appointment, but the person has capacity, but you no longer think that they have capacity. So how do you stop them from making their own financial decisions? That is like such a gray area and really difficult. And that's a situations that I come across quite often. And what we try to do is try to get an assessment of capacity so we can get an idea. You know, as a substitute decision maker, as an attorney, you really do have to be making decisions in the best interests of the principal and also taking into account the considerations. And that's what I think it becomes hard for attorneys, really around being, you know, having this role and also the wishes of the principal, which really might not be in their best interest. And so that can be quite complex. And I think this goes to my point about capacity and elder law. It is super complex. I mean, 30 years ago, we would never have been having, well, we wouldn't have had a podcast, but we would never have this conversation about capacity because people weren't living that long. People weren't being diagnosed with dementia, early onset Alzheimer's. The ability for people to prolong their life is, you know, the greatest ability that they've ever had in the past. And then you couple that with huge estates. I mean, if you just have a property in, you know, a house in Brisbane, it's over $1 million. So the stakes are getting higher. The gray area is getting wider for people. And capacity is really one of those aspects to it that is super relevant. And as I said, I'm obsessed with it. It's like my favorite. It's like my favorite topic. I talk to everyone about it. If you subsequently become a client, please know that I will talk about capacity at some point. It's like my favorite topic. So I hope today has given you a bit of an explanation around capacity and estate planning and what we look at and steps that I like to take as a practitioner. If you want to discuss this further, you know, there's someone in your life that you might be attorney for, or you have an elder person that you're worried about their capacity and what that means for you as their carer, you can pop on my website, www.vicarlaw.com.au. We can go through the scenario and come up, you know, with a solution or a plan to make you feel comfortable. This is not, you know, something that's going away. This is going to become more and more prevalent. So the more information that you can gain and the more I can talk about it, it's fantastic for everyone. So thank you so much for listening today. Next week, I haven't started on the topic, so it's a surprise. So tune in next week. I'll see you then. Bye. That's a wrap for this episode of the Vicar Law Podcast, Protecting Legacies, Resolving Conflicts. I hope you found today's insights helpful in navigating your legal journey. If you're ready to take the next step in securing your legacy or finally dealing with your dispute, visit www.vicarlaw.com.au to book a free consultation with me, Lydia Vicar. You can also subscribe to our newsletter or find out more about today's topic. Your future begins now, and we're here to guide you every step of the way. Until next time, I'm Lydia Vicar, signing off. The Vicar Podcast comprises general information and does not serve as a substitute for professional advice. Prior to making any legal decisions, individuals are advised to seek independent professional guidance and assess the suitability of this information for their own individual goals and objectives.